Thank you. Yay! 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 Yay!
Where interactions going on. That's where then everything can be tasted. Right? It means it's a taste to just be attracted to Krishna or attached to Krishna. But when you actually perform activities, then it takes it to different aspect.
Is it possible that even just in dancing can become like a sense gratification? Because a lot of people just come for the prasada of singing and dancing.
Yes, but the sense gratification is in connection to who? Who is the sense gratification in connection to?
Because if there is no prasada
you're not here just to add to the global warming, right? I'm on call doing enough of that, right? So the point is what is their singing and dancing and eating connected to? No, it's not a matter of not me. I want something coming out of your mouth that shows that there's some intelligence.
That is
exactly
what I'm saying.
Not exactly what you're saying. You're not even thinking about what you're saying. You're just trying to, you're just blabbing. The point is whose prasad is it? Yours? No, whose prasad is it? No, I don't want to hear your question. I already heard it. I'm not deaf.
Okay.
My point is,
for your information.
The point is like this. Whose prasad are the devotees eating? Whose?
Krishna.
Okay. And when they're chanting and dancing, whose name is it? Okay, so Krishna says anything in connection with him is perfect. Anything not in connection with him is useless.
Yes.
Therefore, if the devotees come together, chant and dance, and take prasad, why would there be a consideration this is sense that?
No, I'm not talking about non-devotees, but some non-devotees come to temple
so,
just for like singing, dancing. Or
yes, but whose name are they singing and dancing about? Whose name?
Yes, it is Krishna's name, but that religion is not singing Krishna.
But the point is it is about Krishna.
But you are saying some people have religion different, not
but
saying
it's
Krishna.
It's not a matter of that. It's connected to Krishna. It's perfect.
That's the only thing that is connected to Krishna. Even the Muslims are connected to Krishna.
Yes, and that's why everything's going on. Like that. But, okay, so we'll move on from here. Okay? So, so we have this element of that the action itself is the most important. So the action being the most important, then that means, how do you say? That's what Krishna's focus is on. But for any action that is performed, then there must be some preliminaries for that to happen, right? And once something has a pastime or an activity that is finished, there's always going to be a conclusion, right? Because there's always the sambandha element, there's always the prayojana element. Does that make sense? So this is very, very important when you're dealing with relationships, that all these three are considered, right? Is that what are the preliminaries before performing an activity? Having done the activity, what would be the natural conclusion? Right? The preliminaries then prepare one that one is the most enthusiastic for performing the activity. Having performed the activity with others, the conclusion is what creates the bonding. Right? Otherwise, it's no bonding. It's just no bonding. Does that make sense? If you perform an activity, there's no conclusion, then there'll be no bonding between the different personalities. It won't be considered that great. You know, the activity was nice, but you only remember the activity. You won't remember the relationship with the others. Right? But that's what you carry with you, is that attraction and attachment. Does that make sense? Yes or no?
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're going to take prasad. It's not that just suddenly prasad happens. You have to set up for prasad. You have to make sure everything's arranged nicely. Having arranged everything nicely, then, you know, and the better you arrange it, then the better the prasad service goes, right? You bring the buckets, you don't bring the spoons, you know, different things like this, then means your success in the prasad service is how well you prepare. And then having concluded, it's not just that the last, you know, you put something on someone's plate and you just go over and sit down and then that's it. No, you're checking if everybody's all right, if everything's there. Is there a place for the devotees to throw the plates? Can they, you know, where do they wash? How does that all work? You know what I'm saying? Is there places where devotees then can relax after the prasad? Does that make sense? Like that. So those things are important, not just, okay, take the prasad and then out the door. Right? So, whatever is going on will always be these things, right? That's always part of the equation. So in the activity, then these must be applied. We'll see that this always works in this way. So then in this, as far as then application, also then we see that these three sambandha vidhaya prayojani, then we have madan mahan govinda govinda. So madan mahan means attraction. Right? Govinda is the activities itself, the pastimes, right? It means engaging in the senses. And then Gopinath means the ultimate goal, that love for Krishna. So we see that in our line, then we're followers of Rupa Goswami, and his deity is Govindaji. So Govindaji becomes the prominent. Does this make sense? Right? It's not Gopinath, where it means the other acharyas that are dealing with Gopinath, they're not our main acharyas. And we don't think of Madhu Pandit as, you know, so prominent. Right? Sometimes then for us, then also Raghunath Das would be put as the Prayojana acharya. But still, he is serving Rupa. Does that make sense? So you always have this element where Rupa is the prominent person, his deity Govinda is the prominent deity. Any questions on this? Yes.
Govinda is a Prayojana, then how we approach Prayojana, we know the understanding of the deities has a practical implication in our lives, how we approach the deities.
Means Madan Mahan is our attraction to Krishna. Gopinath is the attachment. So if you're applying something, then the mind always goes from attraction to attachment to activity. Right? When we logically explain something, you know, then we go from I said attraction to activity to the goal, right? Because that process is being followed. But what's happening is first the mind just has to accept it, right? So you're first going from sambandha to prayojana, right? It means when you identify with the relationship, you want to be involved in the relationship. Then only then you become, you know, attached to the results you can get from that relationship. So it goes from sambandha to prayojana. Having gone to prayojana, then you come back, you actually perform the activity. Right? You know, so, and then from that, then you get the results. So in other words, the mind touches on prayojana before abhideya. So you're going sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, but there's a touch on prayojana before abhideya. Like that. But the mind, until it's like, okay, that's the conclusion, then it doesn't. So, in other words, for the mind, it's the relationship and the conclusion that's important. because that's where emotion is actually directly appreciated. You know what I'm saying? In Abhideya, then when you're performing the activity, then you are absorbed in the activity. So the actual experience of the activity is just part of it. You know, I mean, it's like homogenous. You don't separately appreciate it. Because if you're appreciating the activity, that's static. So Abhideya is dynamic. So you're actually performing it. But you can't, you know, be having a good time and thinking, wow, I'm having a great time. Because as soon as you're thinking, I'm having a great time, you've stopped doing the activity that generated the good time. Right? That's the whole point. So the experience in Abhideya is what you call aparoksha. And it means you have five stages of gaining knowledge, gaining understanding. That is direct perception, you know, using the senses, you directly see the observable items. Or you hear from others, right? That's the second level. Third level then is you are experiencing it, but you're not specifically aware of it. Means you are, but you're not. The example is given of when you're asleep, that you're unaware, but in the morning I can say, how did you sleep? And you can tell me exactly. Even though when you're asleep, you're unaware. You know what I'm saying? But if while you're sleeping, I ask you, how are you sleeping? Then you can't be sleeping to give me an answer. To be aware, you need to be directly aware of it. So in other words, you're experiencing it, but you are not separately aware of it. Does that make sense? That's the secret in Abhideya. Because as soon as it means many people have difficulty performing an activity because they're always aware of it. You know, that's why it's saying is that you perform the activity not as habit. So then you're just performing it. You're not thinking about it. That's why sadhana is there, because then the Abhideya will go smoothly. Right? And then the idea is that you absorb yourself in Krishna. So like that, then you're trying to absorb yourself like that in the activity for Krishna's pleasure. In this also then you're experiencing it, but the activity is being done for someone else's pleasure. So you have the element of sacrifice. Right? So this is then also the natural position of Naishkarmya. Right? I mean, your activity is only going to be perfect if it's in Naishkarmya. Because if it's in Naishkarmya, you can focus on the activity and on whoever it is, pleasure that you're working. Like if you're doing kirtan, you're just thinking of chanting the holy name for Krishna's pleasure. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, in your daily activities, you're performing your activities for another person's satisfaction. Right? As soon as it's for your satisfaction, you're going to be constantly checking if you're being satisfied. And as soon as you're checking, you're not actually performing the activity anymore. Does that make sense? You know, it's either going to be, are you attracted, or are you attached? Or, you know, I mean, in other words, are you getting a result, or, you know, is there possibilities? Or so that's why it's said, this is one of the mysteries of the devotional process, that it's thought that the person who's more detached will actually do the activity less well. It's just the opposite. The more attached someone is, the less perfect is his activity. So that's why it's sometimes misunderstood, the concept how a grihastha can perfectly perform his duty. His family is perfectly satisfied, but he's totally detached. Because it's actually only someone like that can totally satisfy the family. It's thought, if I'm attached, then I can do it. No, it's actually if you're detached, then only you can properly perform duties. Right? Because then it's an austerity that you're performing your duty and you can take it to the point of sacrifice. Otherwise, much of the time, as a very dutiful person, that's all the farther it is. It's not sacrifice. Now, if something goes wrong, the wife becomes upset. So he controls himself. He doesn't become upset. He doesn't say the wrong thing. he's not acting in a positive way. He's just gone neutral to keep from exploding and freaking out. So that's not dynamic. You know, he's thinking, I don't like this, or, you know, why does it have to be like this? So he's going back and forth between Sambandha and Hayoji, and there's no Abhideya. So until he starts the Abhideya, then only the relationship starts to become dynamic again. You understand? But if one is detached, that means you're working on the platform of sacrifice. You're doing it for someone else's satisfaction. Therefore, then, when these situations come up, you deal with it for the other person's satisfaction, because you don't have something to gain from it. Right? You know, directly, indirectly, one always gains. So, therefore, one is still dynamically active. And one can act in a sense, you're in that way, then you would say you're above it. Wife becomes upset, you know, why does she always get upset? It's just a matter of, oh, she's upset, so I should deal with that. Right? Because it's understood, wives get upset. So it's not a matter of I like or don't like it, it's just the way it is. You know, sky is blue, you know, the leaves are green, you know, water's wet, you know, like that, sun's hot, you know, it's just the way it is. Does that make sense? So I don't have my own, you know, how you say, agenda in it, so therefore I deal with it perfectly. Right? That's why you see, you know, Yudhishthira and Arjuna and all these personalities, they're the perfect husbands. Right? The perfect friends. Krishna himself, he's perfect in all these, but he himself has nothing to gain by any activity. But he's the one that, every interacting with him, the highest rasa is tasted. Because he doesn't do anything for himself. Because everything is him, so there's nothing to do for him. It's already him. So he's doing it for someone else's satisfaction. So because this is the platform that Krishna functions at, this is the natural platform that the devotee functions at. So this Naishkarmya, all these things, are not there just to generate this very dry, boring environment in which no one interacts with each other. No, it's actually to generate the most dynamic platform for devotees to interact, because it's the platform that Krishna functions at. Right? You want to be with Krishna, then you have to be like Krishna. Right? The drop of seawater matches in and blends into the sea because it's the same material. Right? So when we are in that same mood of austerity and sacrifice, Krishna, then you can move in the same platform with that status. Right? Krishna is in the material world, he has nothing to do here, but he does activity. So we're in the material world, technically we have nothing to do here, and so, but we do activity. Right? For pleasing others, according to the rules, so austerity and sacrifice. So then you're on the same platform as Krishna. Right? We're small, he's unlimited. Like you know, the gold and the gold mine, they match. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that, then it works. So these things are here that in the beginning, the by karma we know, okay, I perform material activities, that's not good, I give it up, then that's considered good, like that. And so it speaks to the karma mentality. Right? And so then karma yoga is nourished with that. Jnana yoga is like, oh yes, it's like, this is not important, so therefore I don't get involved in it like that, but I perform my duties. Right? So the jnana element, yes, you know, it's nourished if someone is coming from that angle, like that. Or I absorb in activities and all that, it's a sadhana, and so the habit is there, but my meditation or absorption is on the Supreme, so it works for jnana yoga. Right? So this combination of these three, that's called bhuti yoga. Right? That's what the Gita is giving us. But the ultimate point is this same mentality is the mentality that they function on in the spiritual world. So it's a platform of prema. The Vrajavasis have nothing to give. stop on the shot. So depending upon one's position, then one is more inspiring or the other is more inspiring. You know what I'm saying? Because if we say, do this if it pleases Krishna, then many will be inspired, but some won't. So you have to say, do this because this will free you from the material entanglement. Then some will be inspired to do it. Do this because it's a good thing. You'll get good results. Then someone else is inspired. Don't do this, you go to hell. And then some other people are inspired. Does that make sense?
Right. The same principles are universal. So for instance, within our ISKCON society, then sometimes we find, like you made a comment the other night, that there's different places in the temple from 5 years ago. So how do we try and apply the principles for, so the devotee community strengthens and grows and is healthy?
How do you apply it to the community? Means it has to be that you're trying to see how the community can be involved, what they're looking for, what is their needs. In other words, the first place you start from is that being a community member is maya. For many temples, if you live in the temple, then you're Krishna conscious. You're not in the temple, it's maya. So right there, that's going to be a problem, right? It means the pandavas didn't live in the temple. You know what I'm saying? So right there, then you have problems. You know, so the idea is that it's a matter of everyone situating themselves according to what's best for them right now. I'll give the example of fruit. You deal with the fruit in the condition it's at right now. Right? If it's green, then you make it into a chutney. If it's ripe, you eat it as it is. If it's a little bit extra ripe, then you put it in a blender and make something out of it. You know what I'm saying? You deal with it in what state it's in. So, depending upon one's attachments, one's position in life, that's how you deal. Right? If someone's younger, you know, they're studying and all that, then naturally, then, you know, they're brahmacharis, brahmacharinis. And so, then for them, as much as possible, your temple life and those activities, direct activities, are the prominence. You know, gaining knowledge, practice, developing the devotional habits, all those things like that. Having matured, then if they find that this is perfect for them, it satisfies all their needs, they're perfectly satisfied, then why would we continue that? Why do something else? It's already perfect. If one finds that, you know, there's still, okay, now that's great, I'm situating devotional service, I have the knowledge, but the elements of, you know, family life, you know, that particular sense of independence, you know, means the experiences that go along with the family environment is necessary, then one would situate oneself there to get the, to be fully engaged. Right? Otherwise, one's body, mind, words wouldn't be fully engaged. So it's just a matter of where, and then one's in the community for some time, but at some point one retires from that and basically again takes up that full-time service. So one may there, then naturally then they would engage how much they can in their house and associate with other such like-minded persons, you know, have some kind of satsang amongst themselves. So you would have both the temple as the center of the community, but at the same time the community itself cultivates itself. You know, so both things are going on. You know, the temple is cultivating and the members themselves are cultivating.
So
their free time, they used to sneak off and steal sugarcane. And it was great enjoyment for them. Then, when we found out that they were stealing sugarcane, we went to the sugarcane people and asked them, you know, if it would be okay if the boys came over and, you know, could just legally eat sugarcane. Right? So it was worked out that once a week they could go over and how much sugarcane they wanted they could eat. Right? So then, you know, maybe about two or three times the boys were enthusiastic about it, and after that it was no fun anymore. So even a lot of the boys that were so much into stealing sugarcane wouldn't even go over on the day that we were, you know, because there's no fun.
So you say it with the money. Say it with the money. We want money so long we don't have. Once we have, we realize there's too much problem with money.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So therefore, as soon as you recognize what it is and fit it into your Krishna conscious plan, it's not so interesting to the mind anymore. It will still be done. There's still that interest, there's still that habit, but it won't, you actually loosen its like grip on you. As soon as it's authorized. Does that make sense? Friends is another thing. That's just, you know, what can you do? If you can discuss with them and give some direction and tell them nice, but if not, they're individuals. Family, then, that you know, should try a little bit. Family means close family. It means broad, you don't have to worry about, you know, your mother-in-law's sisters, you know, daughters, cousins, wife. I mean, you don't have to worry about that. So, it's just immediate family, then that you start working with. Point is that they have some funny need, but they have to consider in it your position also. Because it's a cooperation. They can't just take it on their own, say need, but then they have to explain why they need it. You know, and then what is an actual plan. Then you have a close family. That's dynamic. If it's just, no, I gotta have it, and that's all, then you're dealing with a kid. So therefore, in your mind, means in etiquette, you deal with them as an adult, but within your mind, I would adjust with it, because you're dealing with an 8-year-old or a 5-year-old. So therefore, it doesn't bother you like even a baby. It's totally, absolutely self-centered, right? But it doesn't bother you because it's a baby. Right? It bothers you when it's, you know, 30 years old. Like that. But if it demands that, then just in your own mind, just switch it into the category of a little kid. But externally, deal with it as an adult, otherwise a fucking freak. You know, 40-year-olds don't like being dealt with an 8-year-old, even though they're acting like it. You know, you have to deal with them like they're 40. His service. You're just a cog in the machine. leaders consider the individual, managers consider how to get done, you know, what they need to get done. You understand? Because philosophically what he's saying is correct, but what is the philosophical and emotional support that is being provided by that, you know, machinery that's engaging? If they have it, then great, that's dynamic, you can't get better than that. But if it's not, it's all on you, then it's not really a very good idea. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the ideal situation is being in a position where you can put yourself in, it means, in, you know, how you say, activities or whatever it is that actually is pushing the limit, but you have the full support and everything that if something goes wrong, that they're there to give support. Because then you're always at your best, you'll never be lazy, you'll never do less than you actually could. So it's just a matter of throw you out there, and then if you burn out, then that's your lack of sincerity. Then that's not very easy. Because it's devotional service, because you've done that much, that'll never be lost. But steady devotional service is always considered better than doing something very big and then doing nothing. But at the same time, is someone who's done something big, even if they're doing nothing now, at least they did something big once. So just the idea that someone is willing to throw themselves in, you know, even if it's over their head, that itself is glorious. You know what I'm saying? You know, when Prabhupada is here, you have someone who's been in the movement 3 months. They go off alone with no money, no nothing, to a new area and just start a temple. You don't see that these days. You know what I'm saying? So that's special. Those people are special. So as an ideal, it's great. But my point is in those days, they had the support of leaders. So if something went wrong, someone was there to support them. That's why it worked.
Mark, can you give an example of what that support might look like?
So it means it will be that if you have problems, they're there to help you deal with them. Right? But when you have problems, it's just a matter of, oh, just surrender. But what is the process, what is the mechanics of that surrender? How to actually deal with the mind, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the point. They can help you deal with the mind. That's what makes it work.
Yeah. that sort of come up and you know everything is shiny and everything. I was looking back for the window, there's nothing shiny there. But not only windows, you know, like when they're in the real life, that's my mistake, I shouldn't be doing that. So I'm like always confused in
the situation. The point is, the switching connection to Krishna, then that's, at least as far as Krishna consciousness goes, then that's a problem. Whatever is connected to Krishna is useful. What's not connected to Krishna is not useful. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is that you took flowers and you offered them to the Lord, then that's not bad. Right? At the same time is, if you're thinking that others will, I mean, it depends now, you don't want to take those flowers. What is your actual motive for not taking the flowers? Not to steal them. What's the problem with stealing? Okay, you're taking some without someone's permission. So why is that a problem? Okay, four pillars of religion. Okay, and why do you care about religion?
Because in order to get in devotional language, it becomes a sadhana, like the four
principles. Okay, so you see, then your motive behind not stealing is connected with devotional service, right? It's not that I don't steal because it's not good. It's not socially good. You understand? That, then you could say, that needs to be adjusted to what you're thinking now. So then, in that way, it's fine. You know what I'm saying? So that position is okay.
Which one is done before or after?
They're both fine, but the point is you're seeing now that, you know, because of this connection with Sadhana and Bhakti and other things like that, it's not good, so therefore I'm not doing it. Right? So then, that's a progress. Before it was just enthusiasm, and so now it's here. You just have to see that same enthusiasm that was there when you take the flowers is there in your not taking the flowers.
Is it like I'm being negative?
No, you're doing service in a different way. Now your service is following those principles of religion for sadhana and bhakti. But before, you're taking the flowers for Krishna. You're saying they're both fine. But the point is you're not comfortable with that other position now, but you're comfortable in this one. So then do like that. Right? Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? It's such an important thing. Jari's going to send someone else. Just they don't want to get up at 3 in the morning.
Now, if someone's has a philosophical leaning and they're being encouraged to engage that in Krishna service by going, for instance, to a Karma university to learn some philosophical Western philosophy, or is it better that they engage in some direct, like Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav? Or is it that the principle is that they engage the intellect, it doesn't matter the detail, or is it better that they...
Well, the point is you're always working on judging what is your better position. Because the point is okay, Western philosophy, but what do they actually have to offer?
So they can...
You know what I'm saying? It's like, you mean, the top of the line, technically, is Socrates. So he understands, technically, not the body, but he doesn't know souls. He knows the material world is an illusion, you know, that we just think it's something. You know, gives the example of, you know, making a fire in a cave and then, you know, putting different shapes in front of the fire and then you see all kinds of things happening on the wall. But, you know, you think they're real because you have no other point of reference. You know, and then this idea is then someone who, you know, some wise person will come along, take you out of the cave, and show you the actual world, like that. But one always has to remember. philosophy that if there's an absolute truth, we have to adjust our life in relationship to that. Right? The sophists are what the people say, you know, what the mass of people say, that is truth, and we adjust ourselves to that. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In simplified terms, that's called political correctness. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you see, even today, this fight between the sophists and the absolutists is still going on. You know what I'm saying? So then the question is, does the Western Academy actually have anything to offer in the way of philosophy? If you actually understand our philosophy, there's nothing that they would discuss that you couldn't understand. So the point is if you really want to use your intellect to work in that field to, you know, I mean, one who knows Western philosophy anyway, right? There's one or two academics sitting here and there that have nothing to do with reality. They have no influence on anybody's life or on the world. So taking that line means you are preaching within a very rarefied atmosphere, you know, of persons who have no connection with actual reality of life that goes on. They're not the movers and shakers. You know, you want to go into an area of something that has more dynamic, you know, going to economics, you know, that those people actually, you know, run the world. But those philosophers have no influence today. No one even thinks about it. So therefore, you're studying the Vedic literatures, if you are philosophically inclined to try to engage your intellect, would be better. You know what I'm saying? If you have the option. And then within that, then take it to a depth, you know, understand why it is, not just memorize a few verses or catch a few things and then that's it. You know, actually try to go to a depth to understand how the mechanics of Krishna consciousness works. Right? If you have to go to school and you're obliged to do your university degree, then you can choose, okay, maybe, you know, philosophy would be, you know, useful, so then you can, you know, invert it and use the same kind of, how you say, analyticalness and all that to use it within the Krishna conscious philosophy or something like that, or whatever, then that's another story. But if you had the choice between the two, it's, you know, it would be like saying, it'd be like this. You want to study car mechanics. So we can take you down to the Ferrari factory where they're actually building the cars, and you can work with those people. Or we can take you down to, you know, the Hasbro Toys company where they manufacture toy cars. Which do you take?
Right.
So that's the point, is that means Vedic philosophy, modern, has nothing to compare to it. They don't even have definitions on the soul. What is God? They can't say it. It's all, well, you know, it's a hard, you know, it's maybe this, that. We can give you one sentence definitions. Clear, consistent. Any point in philosophy, we can give you a consistent answer. No system of philosophy anywhere else can do that. You know, so it's just no comparison. But then you are dealing with faith, you are dealing with the kind of academics you like to deal with. You know, do you actually want conclusions, or do you just like to kind of like intellectually? Because, you know, I mean, they've been working at it for, see, I think Oxford was established, what, 1100 or something, 1100, 1300, I don't remember. So quite a while the academy has been developed. So they have down, you know, nice methods that speak to someone of intellectual ability like that, but does one want to just play in that, or does one actually want answers? Because the modern academy, answers is not theories, you can discuss your theories, you can intellectualize, and the more clever you are at it, the more distinctions or connections you can make in a unique way, it's greatly appreciated. But to say that this is the absolute truth, then you have the same problem that Socrates had. Like that. And all the academics will tell you that's against the rules. You can't do that. You know? And if, as long as you stop there, oh, excuse me, then everybody goes back and smiles, and all this is nice, but you continue with it, you will be ostracized from the academy. But, you know, so nowadays, they just kick you out. They don't hand you a cup of hemlock, but, you know, but basically, that's what they do. So it's just a matter of choice, what actually, really, you know, it's like, do you want to satisfy the intellect or just titillate it? You know, because that's what they like to do. As long as it's like something happening, and people, then it's very intellectually stimulating. So that's their goal, is intellectual stimulation, not conclusion, not satisfaction, not practical application. Because if it was, why is he there? Right? He's the professor of, you know, economics, you know, he's teaching you how the world economics work, and this and that, and so many things. If you really would be talking about it, why would he be making, you know, $5,000, you know, a month when, according to what he said, that knowledge, he could make hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. Right? Because what he's saying isn't actually what makes the market. It's what the market's doing, but what is actually going on, why you buy, why you sell this and that, they don't know. Right? That you learn from someone else who does know. Does that make sense? So it just depends upon what you want to do.
And sometimes the argument's given that if we go to Western philosophers, then we can learn their philosophy and then preach in an academic field.
But what's the big deal about preaching in the academic field? You know what I'm saying? How many academics are there? What do they actually represent? They make themselves bigger than what they are. It's like this. Who cares for academics? It's like you go down the street, how many people even know one? How many have met one? Other than you go to the university, sit in, you know, with another 300 students in the lecture, and you know, like this, and talk and smoke and do whatever you do, you know, pass your grade, and then you leave the university. You don't think of an academic ever again. You know what I'm saying? It's not a world that's that big. The point is preaching to an academic means what? What is your goal? Okay, let's say, okay, let us just even put aside what I just said. Let us say it's important to preach to academics. What is your goal in preaching to academics?
Well, to defeat the scientific theory of evolution, like Prabhupada encourages.
Okay. So then why would you go into philosophy? Then why wouldn't you use Darwin's theory? Because that's where it comes from. Is that the blue light's not on? Is that the just killed it? It's the key itself. See, according to Darwin's own discipline, you can't prove his theory. So why would you use philosophy and use Darwin's own discipline to defeat it? You know? But I don't see any devotees going into what is it, that particular, you know, field. I've never heard of it. Like that. You know, and also if you're going into science, The leading science is quantum physics. Everything else is considered second grade.
Yeah, it's not. He's not interested in the science, it's more the philosophy.
But philosophy is who's talking. Do you ever hear a philosopher talk? Do you see them on a show? Do you see in books? What do you see? They have no influence. That's the thing, is the academy, it's a closed house. You know, it's a closed circuit. And within the circuit, they consider themselves, they know names, they know, you know, positions and this and that. But as far as their influence on the general public, nothing. You know what I'm saying? 70% of people believe in God anyway. So what do we have to deal with them for? You know what I'm saying? That's fair. The other thing is this. Why do you have to be an academic to preach to academics? If you want to impress them in their academic field, you need to be one. But if you want to make the academic into a devotee, you don't need to be an academic, you need to be a devotee. Because the point is coming to a conclusion is against their principles. But as an individual, as a person, he can have his own faith. Therefore, better preach to academics. The time that it would take, you know, you're going to put in how many hours a day? Put in 6 hours a day for how many years? Now, if you went on campus, you made contact, you preach to academics 6 hours a day, you know, let's say 300 days a year, how many academics would you make the bonus? Now, if you spend that time, you become an academic, then what's your influence after that? Have you ever heard of our ISKCON academics have made, you know, great amounts of academics into the devotees? I've never heard of it. Alright? But before, when devotees weren't academics at all, you'd hear of tons of academics who would be impressed with Krishna consciousness and would even write reviews. So that's the point. Look at results. What's going to get you the best result? You're already in the academic field, fine. But why, if you're a preacher, go into the academic field? Preachers are so much more rare. Academics are a dime a dozen. You know, maybe inflation is worth a little more now. You know, but I'm just saying, there's so many of them. You know, like that's no big deal. But real academics starts with MA and PhD. So if you're preaching below that, you're not even doing academic preaching. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because the point is okay, you can say, well, you need a way in. Well, why are they so unapproachable? You know, like that. The point is that if you're someone who's committed to this philosophy and all that, like that, and they're in the philosophy, why do they talk? You've been a member of the Hare Krishna movement for X amount of years, you're practicing sadhana, living in monasteries. That's interesting. I've never had an academic that I've talked to that wasn't interested in what we're doing in the lifestyle. It's intriguing to them. Very intriguing. So I've never found this a problem. You know, generally, university professors are very approachable. Especially for philosophy, because it's a art. So they're more liberal, so they're always much more approachable. Harder to approach quantum physicists. You know, they live in their own world. Right? You know. So then and there we have the Bhaktivinoda Institute for them.
There's been a couple of devotees that have gone back to university, like Vinod Krishna Maharaj and Vinayananda Maharaj. So what is that? Is that just for sort of the elite few
It's not a matter of elite few, it's that somehow or another the circumstances worked that worked for them. See, is that the Kamal Krishna Maharaj, he had to have a way to get into China. you know, so he went in as an academic, you know, so that worked for him. Why Vidyananda Maharshi did, you know, his degree, I don't know. So if there's particular circumstances, then it may work. But as a standard, it's not so important. You know what I'm saying? The modern academy does not really have much to offer if you look at it very directly. They talk about their, you know, objective. But it's not objective. You can't be objective. Because if you're objective, you get thrown out of the academy. Like that. I mean, your objectivity has to be in line with the so-called objectivity of whoever's leading the pack. So if that technically, according to their own definition, is called subjectivity, but they won't agree with that. You know, you get some really emotional reaction if you poke, you know, in this place. It's a very tender spot. So therefore, when devotees who are academics bring up this objectivity, the easiest thing is just take it and throw it right back in the face. This is nonsense. There is no, the modern academy, materialists cannot be objective. They just can't be. Only devotees can be objective because we're looking at, because the material world is created by God. It's just the way it is. It wasn't created by the demon you're part of. So it works by God's law, it's just the way it works. And the academics can't say anything about it. So it's just a matter of, you know, the academics are to be, that mentality is to be used on academics. As soon as a devotee who is an academic uses it on other devotees, that's the time they should be slapped in the face and walked out. Because it has nothing to do with reality. Just has nothing to do with reality. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, Prabhupada
ki jai, Prabhupada
ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, Prabhupada
ki jai,